Let's talk now about vaccinations. Piece in the Mail and Guardian. Good, crisp, clear. Mail and Guardian in Daily Maverick today. Good, crisp, clear piece by two UCT academics, Nick Colianatris and Jeremy Seekings. Three mistakes made by the government in their vaccination program and what we need to do now to fix the problem. One of those academics is Prof. Jeremy Seekings, Professor of Political Studies and Director of Social Science Research at UCT, and he joins me now on Cape Talk. Jeremy, a very good afternoon to you. How are you doing?
Yeah, well, thanks. Good afternoon to you and the listeners.
Nice, crisp, clear piece. Okay, let's walk our way through the three key mistakes. Number one?
When they started the public vaccination system, it was just far too complicated. It was bureaucratic, top down. All of the registration really wasn't necessary. The whole EVDS system, if you remember, you were supposed to register online and then they'd give you appointments. They just put lots of obstacles in the way of people getting vaccines as fast as they could have done.
Basically, I remember a lot of people saying it should have been kept much, much simpler right from the off. Anyone wants a vaccine, go and get it now.
Well, that's exactly right, exactly right. And I think that the, you know, the government and the National Department of Health, you know, their view was, as you know, is that if they didn't organize this minutely, there would be chaos and there would be, you know, huge numbers of people mobbing the vaccination clinics and so on, you know, and they had to also to ration the vaccines because they thought they didn't have enough. So they had this overly complicated system. They also thought that the system was, you know, as a really good way of testing the new national health insurance systems. And that was part of their concern. So they made it far too complicated and put far too many obstacles in people's way.
All right. Mistake number two.
Well, the second sort of big mistake was that I think that they, I'm going to paraphrase this a bit, but that they underestimated the problems of vaccine hesitancy. So really from the beginning, they were far more concerned, at least in their public pronouncements, with the problems, what they thought of as the problems of supply. They always kept telling us, we don't have enough vaccines, there's not enough vaccines coming into the country, we've got to get more vaccines, right? And actually, the real problem from very early on was not the supply of vaccines, the real problem was the getting them into people's arms. So, you know, if you remember that the public vaccination program started at the end of May, or in May, and even in June, when they opened it up to special categories of people like teachers, there were already 1 million surplus doses in the system. Right? By the beginning of July, there were 3 million surplus doses of vaccines around. Now, by the end of July, there were 8 million surplus doses. In August, it went up to 12 million. Now, there are huge numbers. Now, at least 13 million spare doses of vaccines in the system. And as we know, it's been well widely reported, they've actually been turning away doses because they just can't use them. So there's been a surplus of doses in the system. Now, the way that the government responded to this, as we know, was by progressively lowering the age of eligibility and making all sorts of special occupational groups eligible for vaccines, right? So they slowly kind of widened the eligibility. And each time they did it, there was a spurt when the vaccine keen, in other words, people who wanted the vaccination, went to get it. But then, of course, the numbers just dropped down quite sharply, right? And rather than confronting the problem of vaccine hesitancy, right, they kept thinking, well, all we've got to do is adjust the eligibility criteria, and we'll get more vaccination. And in the short term, that was true. They would lower the age of eligibility. They would make it easier for teachers and occupational groups to get it. But they didn't really tackle the problem that in almost every single group, there was large numbers of people who are not coming forward to be vaccinated.
Okay, that's mistake number three, which is underestimating the importance of promoting good information.
Yeah, and that's really, that's the takeaway, the final real point that we want to make is that, you know, the government really has, its communications have been deficient. Now, that's a very sweeping comment, and we realize that some of the provinces, some of the provincial departments of health have been a lot better than others. But the national department, of course, has really just not done a good job in really promoting the message that, you know, the right thing to do, the responsible thing to do is to get vaccinated, right, and to counter vaccine misinformation. There's lots of nonsense, you know, beliefs about vaccination out there. I know, I meet people who tell me this, and I think, you know, that's just, these are so-called false facts. These are just not true. Right? The government hasn't done a good job in getting out there with public information.
Yeah, you're big on this notion of the vaccine keen, that they drove everything, and they were always going, I'm a vaccine keen, we were always going to get our vaccine as soon as we could, and we'll make the effort to do it, and we'll stand in a queue, and many of us can afford the time and cost involved. But that is, what is your estimate? Is it possible to know whether the percentage of the population that is vaccine keen, and what is the percentage that is much more difficult to persuade?
Well, I think we don't have precise data, is a short answer. We've got bits of information from different surveys. There's just a new survey done by some of my colleagues in the School of Economics at UCT, which is about to come out. Right? But my best guess is really, you know, a third of the population is vaccine keen, a third of the population is hesitant, and at most a third of the population is opposed. So the bulk of the people really, it's that middle category, the hesitant people we really want to get. Now, we also know, and this is quite clear from if you look at the provincial data, that a lot depends on what the provincial governments do. So, you know, I was just looking this morning at the most recent provincial data. If we look at the over 60s, the elderly people, right, which province has the highest vaccination rate? It's Limpopo. Limpopo has vaccinated pretty much 80% of its elderly population. Right? That's an enormous success. The Gauteng, which is, of course, you know, the biggest province in the country, right, and Mpumalanga, they vaccinated less than 60% of their elderly population. So Limpopo is getting something right. Gauteng and Mpumalanga are getting something seriously wrong, even in terms of reaching the most vulnerable sections of our population. So, my understanding of what Limpopo has done, they've improved access. They've really been the pioneers in getting out there and making sure that vaccines get to people. Right? And if you make it easy for people to get vaccines, then the vaccination rates go up sharply. A lot of vaccine hesitant people, you know, are not that really opposed. If you make it easy for them, they'll take the vaccine.
Yeah, availability is a key thing. I was talking to someone yesterday, and they were saying that the centres in Khayelitsha are still too small and are not really coping with demand and are a bit inconvenient. And if you can get into more spaces at tactical events or in tactical ways, pop-ups. I gather the Limpopo MEC also is a very impressive person who has really driven this hard on a personal level, and that political leadership helps.
Yep, no, absolutely, I think that's right. And, of course, we know that there's been a real crisis in the National Department of Health over the last 18 months, actually, certainly the whole of this year. The political leadership has been,
compromised.
Turmoil, compromised. And there's, you know, there's been big problems in the bureaucratic leadership too, with vacancies and people filling in for each other and so on. So there's been a big problem. But yeah, absolutely. If you get the political leadership there, strong backup from the professionals in the bureaucracy and, of course, the medical profession, then, as Limpopo shows, you can get results.
All right. What else would you suggest, Jeremy? We've picked apart the problems. What else would you suggest in terms of resolutions? Where do you stand? Where does the evidence stand? We talked a lot on this yesterday about vaccine mandates. Do they work?
Well, that's right. So, you know, Nikki Natras and I, we're big supporters of vaccine mandates. Right? And we're big supporters of vaccine mandates, really, I think, for two big reasons. I mean, the first big reason is that, vaccine mandates are really reminding us that, you know, we might have rights. We've got a constitution that protects our rights, and we know that people are going to court, you know, to say, oh, vaccine mandates are violating our rights. But as citizens, you know, we all have responsibilities. We have responsibilities to other citizens, and the Constitutional Court has always recognized this. Right? We have responsibilities to people who we work with in the workplace. If we're teachers, in university or schools, we've got responsibilities to the students we teach. We've got responsibilities to the people who we share a congregation with in church, or we participate in sports events or leisure activities with. And I think that one of the things the vaccine mandate is really saying is take your responsibilities seriously. If you want to actually participate in these collective activities, if you want to go to the classroom, you want to go to the workplace, you want to go to church, you want to go to a sports event, you've got to do your bit to make this safe for everybody. And making it safe for everybody is what the vaccine mandate is about. Right? If you want to be a hermit, you want to go and live in the middle of nowhere on your own, well, that's up to you. But don't think that you can be a responsible member of the community without actually getting vaccinated. That's the first point. And the second point, which is related to that, I think is the vaccine mandates just give a really important signal, which appears, from the evidence from elsewhere in the world, it appears to be very useful in nudging vaccine-hesitant people just to go and say, OK, I'm going to do it. So my understanding of the evidence from the US and from parts of Europe is that when vaccine mandates get introduced, you suddenly get, you know, at the last minute, you get a sharp increase in vaccination rates as a significant proportion of the people who are not vaccinated then say, OK, but I'm going to go and do it.
Very much though, within the vaccine hesitant, not the vaccine resistant.
I think mandates have
sort of demonstrated they might even have a hardening effect there.
They might. I'm not aware of evidence on that, but that seems likely, yeah.
Jeremy, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. Prof. Jeremy Seekings, Professor of Political Studies and Director of Social Science Research at UCT. He wrote that piece with Nicola Natras, which you'll find on Daily Maverick.